Hi, Kirsty Melville here with you. This is Earshot. And today we're kicking off with a most thought-provoking series about one of our nearest neighbours. When we think of foreign colonial powers, we don't automatically think of Australia. But in fact, Australia administered Papua New Guinea as its own for nearly 70 years. And it was during this time that the Australian Broadcasting Corporation set up a radio service in PNG, modelled on the sound of its own domestic radio station, your very own ABC.
For this country, radio is the way to go, because they don't see you, they hear you. So it's all, you have to paint a picture for them. You know, like, you know, it's true that radio is the theatre of the mind, isn't it? And we've got to do it well. And I am very passionate about radio, there's no two ways about it.
In a country that was still developing and where many of its people lived and still do live very remotely, radio was and is communication gold. And so today, Camilla Hannon goes in search of radio's rich history in Papua New Guinea, a history which reflects its long and complicated relationship with its near neighbour, us, Australia. This is 800 Words for Rain.
In 1968, Australian journalist Sean Donnie was 18 and living in Queensland. And in search of something different to the white, broad landscape of Australia, he arrives in a small town surrounded by rich, fertile land and overlooking a sparkling harbour. The smell of yams cooking fills his senses. The people are dark-skinned, reserved, and speaking a language that is somewhat familiar, but somewhat strange. It's a different kind of heat to Australia. Here, the sweat sits in the creases of your limbs. The humidity makes you lethargic. Your head aches. But Sean had come for a job, looking for adventure. And that's why he came here, to Port Moresby, in Papua New Guinea.
I went up there on secondment to the National Broadcasting Commission from the ABC. This is prior to independence. And I wandered down the road from Wonga Hostel and found a trade store and was looking around for a toothbrush, and all I found was a nail brush with a big handle on it. So I thought, oh, these Papua New Guineans, they must have big teeth. So I bought that and for a few days had a lot of trouble cleaning my teeth until I actually came to a supermarket where they had proper toothbrushes. And I realised, yet again, the ideas that you may have aren't quite right. Every assumption you make comes under challenge, sooner or later. And so you have to readjust your thinking, because it is such a different place to the Australia that I grew up in anyway.
Papua New Guinea is a country of more than 800 languages and cultures, in an area about twice the size of Victoria. After World War II, the Australians took control of PNG. One of their first steps was to set up radio transmission, broadcasting in English.
Identification, this is Let's Speak English for Standard 4, program number 6, recorded in Port Moresby on the 20th of January 1966 for future replay and identification.
There's the canoe, and there's Kinabo waiting with it. Hello, Kinabo.
Good morning, Peter. Morning, Tano.
Good morning, Kinabo. Have you been waiting for long?
There were some ABC people who really didn't realise that they were in Papua New Guinea. It wasn't real for them. You know, they sort of oscillated between the office, their houses, and the RSL club.
This is Jeff Hurd. He came to PNG as a 21-year-old in 1963. He fell so hard for the place, he never left.
There was one guy who was on the ABC programming side who was constantly advocating that we should keep Blue Hills running. And Blue Hills had already been dropped in Australia. But he wanted to keep Blue Hills running in Papua New Guinea. You know, from a Papua New Guinea point of view, it was just rubbish. It was talking about a world that was totally unrelated to Papua New Guinea.
He's handling the dishes with the confidence, but certainly not the skill of a juggler, and Judy says in alarm.
Oh, Joe, the new dinner set. Now, careful, you'll drop those plates.
Oh, no, they'll be right. Look, I can... Oh, gee.
Oh, whatever will Hilda say?
Well, my...
I know there was certainly a hell of a lot of prejudice. If you're an Australian, you were instantly top of the heap, or in the sort of the upper strata of whatever society there was. I was told by Papua New Guineans that an Australian woman coming out of a store carrying anything was absolutely unknown. she would just expect to have stuff all carried for her, and by some mischance she would end up carrying a bag on the street. She'd just whistle up whoever was walking past and get them to carry it for her.
You remember this instrumental number called Mexico?
And this is Patrick Patu, PNG broadcaster for the last 35 years.
When ABC was here, they were playing a lot of overseas songs. So you will ask a Papua New Guinean to tell you three songs from the Eagles, they will, just like that, click of the fingers. You tell them to play some of the local artists who are popular, they'll be scratching their head.
Nine PA had been set up in Port Moresby in 1944 by the wartime forces of General MacArthur. In 1946, the ABC took full control of 9PA from the Army, and in 1962 established 9RB in Rabaul on the PNG island of New Britain. These two stations were mainly for the Australian expats and were seen as part of ABC radio back on the mainland.
This was my big chance. I was 22.
Former journalist Keith Jackson joined the ABC in Papua New Guinea in 1966.
When I got there, I found like I was part of an exclusive club, which had its sort of short-term appeal to have that sense of superiority over the rest of the world. But I'd just come out of the bush in New Guinea, and really that sort of attitude to the place did not suit me at all. And what particularly didn't suit me was the fact that this really was a pretty much a bubble of an organisation in Papua New Guinea then. It didn't really have an eye out or any sense of understanding of the needs of the Papua New Guinean people for broadcast communication. And those sorts of things, for someone who'd been amongst the people for 3 or 4 years, as I had, seemed to be very anachronistic.
While the expats were guzzling gin slings in the yacht club bar, the locals were listening to something else.
Hello, Algera. This plan is Story Long Radio Bal. Long Nipply Talk, Seven Long Nipla, Long Story, Long Number One Radio Station, Long Government, inside Long Papua New Guinea.
Alongside the ABC's radio stations, in the mid-1960s, the local Department of Information and Extension Services set up the Government Broadcast Service. These were a series of radio stations throughout the country that disseminated public information to people in the villages. Things like health information, agriculture, traditional music and news. And most importantly, they broadcast in local languages.
Back then, people were very interested and they were very eager to listen to their traditional song come out on radio, hear them tell their stories on radio. So that was the focus of most of the people. And they were listening to themselves.
Michael Samuga. He started as a radio broadcaster in the town of Madang. He's now with the National Broadcasting Corporation as their executive director of provincial radio.
People were proud that, you know, this is my traditional song. For all these years, I've been the only one singing and dancing to it. And now people from other districts, other areas can listen to it.
It's time to leave the big smoke of Port Moresby and go out bush, to the mountain mists and winding rivers, where the majority of the people live.
Most of the time, too, we used to record choirs everywhere in the Gazelle Peninsula.
This is Anton Count, who at this time was working for 9RB in Rabaul.
Sometimes, you know, there were very rough recordings, you know, like one time Robin Puffert went and recorded the choir from there. But in the background there were these crows, you know, crying away in the background. So when they started recording, all the crows can be heard here. And for years, every time they played those songs, you could hear also the crows harmonizing in the background.
We walked the bushes. We slept for weeks out in the bushes, recorded, and then came back, put the content together. The tapes were in the boxes. We packed them into steel cases, okay? We call patrol boxes. All right, when we traveled, before we arrived at the district station, there's a program segment called Talk Service. It's just service messages.
Tuk-tuk Service here, long look round, long all infant welfare.
So the station was already sending out Talk Service, maybe a week before. Okay, in Talk Pisin, display Talk Service, go along, and mentions the name of the community. That one plus radio announcer, blong Radio Medang or Radio Eastern Highlands, by come le Yupla, la this la day. Now Yupla must help him, and by recording all something. And so the community was already ready. So when you get down there, there's a lot of volunteers who are willing to pick up that steel patrol box and walk with you from one village to the other. That showed how connected the people were to the radio station because of the fact that an announcer is coming and we're going to have the opportunity to, you know, other people are singing on the radio, so we'll have our opportunity now. We're going to sing in the radio, we're going to tell our stories, and we're going to talk and people are going to listen to us. And so it was big things to them. So they were more than willing to pick up that steel patrol box and walk the miles to the other community, leave it there. They go back, the other community picks up, after recordings, picks up the patrol box and then on to the next until you come back to the district station and you come back to the fly out or drive back. So that's how we did it.
Here she is, a big hand for Her Majesty, followed by the Duke of Edinburgh.
Everybody was interested in radio. Whenever there was a radio on, everybody crowded around it so that they just, you know, could listen to people talking, listen to the news, listen to the kind of music that they were playing. Owning a radio set was not everybody owned one, but those like the government workers, public servants at the time, they owned radios. So when they had their radio on, we used to listen to whatever the station was on.
But at the same time, there was information about how do you plant coffee, because coffee was being introduced in a big way at that time, cash crops, cocoa. And so agriculture officers and colonial administration district commissioners used the radio station effectively in informing people about health and also about the eventual coming of independence. And they took time to introduced this idea that eventually Australia would allow Papua New Guineans to run the nation themselves.
In the late 1960s, Australia had become uncomfortable with its role in PNG. And so the journey towards independence for Papua New Guinea began.
What has been most pleasing about my visit has been to see the great development and change for the good that is taking place. You now have your own government, led by Chief Minister, Mr. Michael Somare, a man whom I have admired for a long time.
First of all, our job then was to try and disseminate information about independence and self-government.
Jimmy Vigneault, former broadcaster with the MBC.
We started producing programs which would have the independence themes in it. There were dramas which were being produced. There were also short stories which were being read on air, and we had programs which also were being done to try and get people aware of what independence was all about. But in those days, there was only one radio network, which was the NBC. There was one newspaper, and that was it. So it was incumbent on us to be able to do the best we could to propagate information on independence.
You have been with me for a month now, and you work very hard.
Don't think about it, Uncle. Work is good for me. I'm young and healthy. And what is more, I enjoy the work.
That is the cause of my thinking.
Because I enjoy the work, Uncle?
But yeah, there were a lot of doubts. But there are also, you know, people who said that it was good that we should run things ourselves. Forget about the white men, you know. If we ran our own affairs, we'd be far better off.
People of Papua New Guinea, the big day we have looked forward for so long, our independence time, will arrive in a few minutes now. Tomorrow is the 16th of September, 1975, the day of independence for Papua New Guinea.
That's PNG's founding father, Sir Michael Somare, who himself was a former broadcaster with Radio CPIC.
In a few moments, our young nation takes possession of the prize which marks our people's determination and hard work.
With independence, what were the dreams, do you think? What were the dreams for Papua New Guinea?
I would say that time, like, Papua New Guinea was still a young country. Majority of the people, I don't think, really understood independence. That's my point of view.
Robin Ponio joined Radio CPIC as a broadcast officer in 1973 and now works for Radio East New Britain.
I don't think most people in the village, like, they only know the talk, this is independence now and Papua New Guinea, we are going to go here. And Papua New Guinea was still getting education that time. So only those few people who are educated, probably not. Like for me too, it's a bit of a mixed feeling. I said, like, what are we going to do now? We're independent now. What are we going to do? But as years go by, I begin to see and I begin to understand. And I said, oh, okay, this is where we are going. For me personally, happy, but had this thought in my mind, are we going to make it? Are we going to make it?
Before independence, there was so much stories floating around that the place would go up in smoke or chaos and terrible things like that. But it didn't happen.
Journalist Caroline Tierman has been with ABC Radio Australia's Tok Pisin service for the last 40 years.
It was very early in the morning when the flag was raised at Independence Hill.
But today, for the first time, this flag will fly in its own right as a flag of an independent nation alongside the flags of...
There was all these stories about some, you know, rain dances to spoil the party. And so it did rain a little bit, and we thought, oh, all these sorcerers or things. Things like that. And so it rained a little bit, and then it stopped. When the new flag was hoisted, you could have heard a pin drop. It was quite emotional, very emotional. It's like your mom just kicked you in the guts and left you on the side of the road to fend for yourself.
In Papua New Guinea, there are over 800 words for rain.
This is ABC National Radio. You're listening to AM, and it's just coming up to 7 minutes past 8. And just under 8 hours ago, with the background of a 100-gun salute, echoing across Port Moresby Harbour and fireworks lighting the sky overhead, Australia's 69-year rule in Papua New Guinea ended and the new independent Papua New Guinea came into being. The leaders of more than 20 countries watched the ceremonies in Port Moresby together with over 10,000 locals, and among them our reporter Warwick Adley.
Papua New Guinea is independent and free.
We got up in the morning, the place was set, and we went down to, there was a little recreation area there where the gathering was going to be, a little grandstand. So we're there, I went, I set up my machine. Have to shift my mic around to record the sing-sing group here, to record the choir here, or to get the speeches there. It was a very touching time, especially when the Australian flag was lowered and the PNG flag was going up for the first time. And the key up there, I forgot his name. When the Australian flag came down and the policeman blew the bugle, the last post, and the key up really cried. He cried, he has tears streaming down his eyes. And everybody there, they were crying to see that. It was a very special moment. To see the Australian flag coming down for the last time, and then the PNG flag was going up. People were shedding tears. It was not tears of sadness. I think it was tears of joy.
As part of the transition to independence, the ABC helped to set up the National Broadcasting Corporation of PNG. This amalgamated the local radio services with the ABC stations in Port Moresby and Rabaul. The Karai, or National Radio Service, coming out of Port Moresby, broadcast mainly in English. And the Kundu, or Provincial Network, broadcast in Tok Pisin, the new lingua franca of an independent, united PNG. December 1st, 1973, the NBC studios opened at 5 Mile in Port Moresby, on the very same site as General MacArthur's wartime radio station. In fact, the current managing director still uses MacArthur's desk today.
The English language as spoken on national radio was like a legacy from the ABC. So we were probably subconsciously trying to be as good as what was being done at that time.
Jimmy Vigneault.
And some of the other staff who were Australians who were still working with us were also listening, and they would, if you said something different to what was expected, they would come and, put a little jibe in and say, oh, what did you mean by that, you know? So that was something that we had to be conscious of. So these friends of ours would be, listening. We knew that. Not only them, but the supervisors listening. So we were always very careful in what we were saying on air.
When you come, you have to carry all your records, and you got so many buttons you're holding on to you have to queue up your record, and exactly where you want it to go.
Alan Arafai, longtime broadcaster with the NBC.
Turn your mic on, you've got to make sure that the fader goes on, and then you've got to let it go. And the timing, you have to be mindful about time, because it was not like now, the computer does it all for you. So it was quite a challenge. And, when you're on air too, we were reading the news also, that was the other thing. And the first time I went on, it was really nerve-wracking, I was really sweating. I got to ensure that, you couldn't have dead air, that was just a no-no. And having to work between tapes, records, and all of that was quite something. It was, it was very, very challenging. But you look forward to coming to work, because a lot of people rang, because you knew they commented on the shows that you were doing.
For this country, radio is the way to go, because they don't see you, they hear you. So it's all, you have to paint a picture for them. It's true that radio is the theater of the mind, isn't it? And we've got to do it well. And I am very passionate about radio. not to worry about it. Radio comes before anybody else to me. That's what I do, and maybe that's why I'm not too close to my families. When everybody's asleep, I'll be up reading and doing this and that. How well can I say this? Is there any other way to say it better? Because I spend my time on radio.
Well, that's all for now. So until tomorrow, I'll say good night, everyone.
Good night, Arthur.
Cheerio, Rupert. See you tomorrow.
Yes. Well, that's the end of one day and the start of another. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I must say it's been very pleasant showing you around. Now I shall have to say thank you for coming and goodbye.
And 800 Words for Rain was produced by Camilla Hannon. The sound engineer was John Jacobs. And make sure you catch part two of the series when Camilla lands in PNG just as the country prepares to go to the polls in its national election this month. We'll tune in to the NBC and hear how the radio broadcaster is struggling to be heard at this critical time.
The longer I'm in PNG, the clearer it becomes how essential radio, and in particular the NBC, is for the locals. As the public broadcaster, it has the role of holding governments to account, of raising the alarm that an earthquake's about to hit. But without adequate transmission coverage, the NBC is unable to do its job.
With the breakdowns in transmitter facilities and all that, our ability to continue to have that link with our rural communities and the remote communities, it's been really hard on us. Especially for broadcast offices who travel into the districts, spend nights, and then come back, produce the content, but at the back of their mind they know that it won't be heard by the people who are supposed to hear them because of the reality of the coverage being very limited now.
A journalist's job in PNG is a real hard thing, but I'm surprised that we have survived this long.
How do you think we have survived this long? You have survived this long.
Well, I suppose we've been treading the line very carefully, putting our foot on one side, and when it gets burnt, we put it on the other side.
That's part two of 800 Words for Rain, online or next up in your earshot podcast feed. I'm Kirsty Melville. Catch you then.